You're listening to Nightlight Radio Network. This is Dr. Bob Hieronymus, co-host of 21st Century Radio. We are happy to present this rebroadcast of our show on Nightlight. You know, my life changed in July 1968 when I spent just a little bit of time with the greatest guitar player in the world, Jimi Hendrix. Well, we didn't talk about music. We talked about the reverse of the Great Seal of the United States. You know, the eye in the triangle and pyramid and its mystic mottos. Yes, that's right. That's the same symbol you see me discussing for the last 45 years. And more recently, on the History Discovery, National Geographic, Sci-Fi, and BBC TV, Russian TV, German TV, Canadian TV, you name TVs. And, well, Jimmy had great insight into this symbol, and it was just a couple of years ago I discovered one of his drawings of the eye in the triangle above the pyramid in the book called The Illustrated Jimi Hendrix that he drew in the summer of 1968. Well, less than 2 years ago, I had the great joy of not only spending a few hours with Jimmy's sister Janie, but we spent a great deal of time with brother Billy Cox and his lovely wife Brenda. Legendary bassist and Musicians Hall of Fame inductee, Billy Cox is synonymous with almost any reference to Jimi Hendrix and rock and roll history. From their army days, Billy would always have an extended friendship with Jimi Hendrix. The kindred spirits would have a musical chemistry that was nurtured over the years as both performed regularly as sidemen for the most prominent blues and rhythm and blues acts of the day. The bond between the two men would write a new chapter in music history. And today, Billy Cox owns a video production company. He has produced numerous blues and myriad of gospel shows. He co-authored the books Jimi Hendrix Sessions and Ultimate Hendrix with John McDermott and Eddie Kramer. Billy has been the recipient of numerous awards and honors, among which, in 2009, Billy Cox was inducted into the Musicians Hall of Fame. Billy received the Founders Award in 2010. It was given by Microsoft's co-founder, Paul Allen, and in 2011, Billy was inducted into the West Virginia Music Hall of Fame. This is Billy's third time with us on 21st Century Radio, and very special because he recently released a new CD that I just can't stop playing. It's called Billy Cox, Old School Blue Blues. Welcome back to 21st Century Radio, Billy.
Dr. Bob, thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for joining us, Billy. You're an awful busy guy, and I'm glad we could catch up with you. Hey, Billy, how's your wonderful, lovely wife, Brenda?
She's doing fine. Uh-huh. Everybody's doing fine around the house with their mom.
Yep, you guys sound like you were doing fine yesterday, too, weren't you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, Billy, you are famous for saying, quote, "Blues ain't perfect. The blues is life." What do you mean by that?
It's about life. It's about blues. It's about living. Everyday living. Everybody has the blues. I'd like to, it's a quote that Albert King said, the baby laying in the crib, he wants to get his bottle, he's kicking and screaming and jumping up and down, and when they give him that bottle, he's quiet because he had the blues. So if a baby can have the blues, sure enough, anybody can have the blues. And blues is about life, it's about living.
You know, when you sing the blues, something really happens to you, doesn't it?
It does, if you put yourself into that particular situation.
Yeah, you know, when I discovered that, I used to like to walk around the street singing, which annoyed a lot of people. But I used to sing, and I'd sing myself out of depressions. I'd just make up songs and just go rolling along. And that's when I discovered, it really does work, if you can bring it out of yourself, that is.
Right.
Yeah. Now, you've also said many times that the music that Jimi Hendrix played was nothing more than loud blues. Did you say that?
I did say that.
Yeah, we got you on that one, don't we?
Okay. Well, really, there's no way. You know, the older blues masters had smaller amplifiers, Lightning Hopkins and Johnson and all of these guys who played the blues, even in the early years, B.B. King, very small amp. Mm-hmm. When Jimmy came along, he had bigger amps and played about the same type of music, but it came in, they called it acid rock. They called it hard rock. But nevertheless, you can call it what you want to call it, but it was nothing more than the blues.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, I'm trying to think, what kind of blues did he like most of all?
Delta blues.
Alter blues?
Delta, D-E-L-T-A, Delta. That's real, the Southern blues.
Well, give me an education here in our listening audience, too. Southern blues, how is it different than, say, the blues we got up here in the North?
Well, Northern blues doesn't use a lot of harmonicas, and it's more, I didn't realize that there were so many categories. I got on the CD Baby, and I found 23 different definitions
really?
For blues.
Yeah, well, what can you recall a couple that surprised you?
Piedmont blues, Delta blues, contemporary blues, and the list goes on and on and on. They've categorized 20-some-odd different type of blues.
Mm-hmm. Well, when was your first, I don't know enough about your early history. Mm-hmm. I know that you spent some time up in Pittsburgh, didn't you?
Quite a bit. I was born in Wheeling, West Virginia, and then moved to Pittsburgh, and then from Pittsburgh went on to the military.
That's right.
I was born influenced in Pittsburgh. Well, let's see. I got my blues influence from Wheeling, West Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a radio station out of Nashville called WLAC. It was a 50,000-watt clear channel. Mm-hmm. And there was two fellows, one named John Richburg and Hoss Allen.
Mm-hmm.
And they played all night long R&B. That was my first introduction to R&B. So I go from church music and blues. Now here's R&B. Then I moved to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, which was a jazz mecca. So I got my early influences from a lot of jazz artists there.
So,
and by the time I got to the military, Jimmy had all those influences also. And so we gelled together musically very well because we had all of those influences in our repertoire.
Hey, could you tell us, our listening audience, and remind us any, because you've related to us before about your experiences with Jimmy in the Army, but what was the very first experience you had with him and... where was his guitar at that time?
Well, I was coming out of a theater, and it was raining real hard, and I wound up on the doorstep of Service Club Number 1, which time the window was up, and which time I heard this guitar playing in its infancy.
Mm-hmm.
And he was trying to play a song at that time that was recorded by King Curtis called Soul Twist. And he was making quite a few mistakes, but I heard where he was trying to go with that, and I liked the flavor he was giving to it. So I went in, and, Doc, like a lot of us, we played instruments in our high schools, and we just laid them down.
Mm-hmm.
I think my sister played a clarinet, my brother played a trumpet, et cetera. So we all had our different instruments we played. And I told him, I said, hey, man, I said, I played a little bass, and can I join you and do a little jam? He said, yeah, check one out at the desk there, and we can do some jamming. So they had a little Dan Electro bass. It was a Silvertone, probably,
mm-hmm.
I think it was.
Yeah.
In the Sears Roebuck catalog. And
yeah.
So I exchanged it for my ID card, and we started jamming. And lo and behold, we had a kindred spirit going on there, and we decided to form a group, and the rest is history.
Did you perform for the other folks in service at that time?
Yes, we did. In fact, we got so good until I was on jump status, and he was too. So I found out we used to rehearse at the Service Club Number 2, even though I met him at Service Club Number 1. I found out that the guy who was a program director was getting discharged shortly. So I went to see the colonel. So the colonel said, how can I go about getting this job? He says, well, you have to terminate your jump status, because we're Third Army here, and we can't take paratroopers here. So I had about a year and a couple of months left. So I terminated my jump status and got that job that boy had left vacant.
Mm-hmm.
And guess what it cost me? Two fists in Canadian club and $50. Because I knew the sergeant who wrote the orders out, so I was still me the opportunity in the daytime to ghost after, you know, they had them all together and together, and I thought everybody was, nobody was AWOL, to let them go. And Jimmy, he, I don't know what, he had no job, really. And so he grabbed his guitar and run down to the service club, and then my job was to, at 9 o'clock, get there and make sure that they had a cleanup detail that came in, and they clean up, report to me, and then after they get through cleaning up, they report to me again, I let them go. But meanwhile, Jimmy would come in the morning, and we'd sit around and practice all day long.
He did practice all day, didn't he?
Yes, we did.
Yeah, and is it true that he... had his guitar on his stomach when he slept at night?
That's right. He never had a case for that guitar.
Never had a case.
In fact, he never had time to put it in a case. And whenever you saw him, you saw him with that guitar if it was permissible.
Now, you've had mucho, mucho, mucho experience in playing with many of the who's who in rhythm and blues and blues, which, well, which of them? There are so many. I've got a list here in front of me. It must be at least a 20-some or here. But which of them did you enjoy working with the most?
What? Which of them what?
Which of them, of the scores that you worked with, did you enjoy working with them the most? Besides Jimmy, of course.
Oh, Bob, here in Nashville, I became a member. Well, Jimmy, we formed a band called the King Casuals, and Jimmy would go out, and then he'd get stranded. I'd sit for him, he'd come back and play a few months, and he'd go back out. And that was the history of him, because I had faith in him, and I knew eventually he was going to develop into the type of guitar player that the world would recognize and respect.
Yeah.
And so I stayed here, and then after he went off and did what he had to do in order to get his, because destiny was calling him, I stayed here with the King Casuals, and there was a one of the first shows was called the Night Train.
Yeah, Night
now
Train.
Now, that the offshoot of that was Soul Train.
Yeah, yeah.
But Night Train was the first. It was a black and white station at Channel 5, and we played that for a couple of years. We had a chance to play behind quite a few artists would come through town or were, that would come through here. And someone at the found out that we were a pretty good band. Most of us, all of us read. Mm-hmm. So there was a show that was opening up in Dallas-Fort Worth called The Beat. This was a bigger form, formation of Night Train show. So we had an opportunity. Gatemouth Brown was our band leader. And Hall Silence, due to the fact he was the DJ with WLAC at that time, he was the MC of the show. So we had Etta James, and, you know, we heard about the passing of Etta, and we like to send out our regards to her family. She was a great artist, and I had an opportunity to play behind Etta James, Little Milton, Freddie King, Lou Rawls, you name it. All
Wilson
of the greats came through there on that show. And we still did the Night Train show in Nashville, but one weekend out of the month, we would go there and we'd tape Friday, Saturday, sometimes Sundays, and get as many artists as we could. Then we'd get right back to Nashville. So it afforded us to play behind quite a few of the artists. And then also, some of those artists got our names and addresses in case we on times when we would be off. And then we'd go on the road with some of them. I became Mitty Collier's band leader for a while. Mm-hmm. So we had a good time, and before we knew it, we were playing behind Slim Harpo. I played on a few things that Slim put out, T99 New, and a few of the other songs. So we had a good time at that period, and I had an opportunity to play behind some of the greatest blues and R&B artists in the world.
I'll say, you know, that you just named just a couple, but, you know, I think you didn't mention Patti LaBelle, did you?
Yes, Patti LaBelle.
Yeah.
She was at that time with the Bluebells.
Yeah, and Wilson Pickett.
Wilson Pickett, yeah.
Hey, did you ever play behind Sir Walter Jackson?
No, I did not.
You know.
Yeah, Walter Jackson. Yeah, I knew of him, and I've heard some songs. There were so many of them, but Walter, I never played behind him. I think he came a little late.
Yeah, he did, and that's like me, too. I came a little bit late in that, too, myself. That's the reason why I brought that up. Ike and Tina Turner, the reason why I mentioned that was because of I did a huge mural on a nightclub called Soul, the Soul nightclub in the city of Baltimore, And they brought everybody in and everybody through. And it was just wonderful being an artist, spending time with these guys in this nightclub. It was called the Blackjack, and it was really something. Now, along with fellow friend and star in his own right, drummer Buddy Miles, the friendship of Jimi Hendrix and Billy Cox, friends, would forever be etched in music history with the Band of Gypsies. Now, the Band of Gypsies was a power trio that fused blues and hard rock. Rolling Stone magazine, note this, Rolling Stone magazine in its 20th anniversary issue in 1987 cited the Band of Gypsies concert as one of the 10 greatest concerts of all time.
Yeah.
Now, that had to be something. I mean, one of the 10 great, I mean, there's a lot of great concerts there, Billy. What can you remember of that particular concert? Can you remember?
On my Billy Cox, bassist, BillyCox.com, I give some recollections of that. I'm doing some things now that's called this Starman Theory.
Mm-hmm.
And on my bassist, BillyCox.com, you'll see on the Starman series, where I'm expressing some of those, the feelings about the Band of Gypsies and some of those things that happened there. But it was an incredible, incredible concert. Jimmy was happy that we were doing that because he had a contractual agreement. You'll see that if you get on BillyCox.com and you go to my YouTube page.
Well,
but,
yeah.
He was extremely happy to get that done. And then the crowd was overwhelming. I didn't believe we were going to be received like we were. And it was we did two shows, New Year's Eve, 1969, and two shows near New Year's Day, 1970. Mm. And all four of those shows were incredible musical accomplishments, I think, for that group.
Well, we're going to take our first, or actually our final break of this hour. But for those of you who want to enjoy more insight into the Band of Gypsies, please go to www.bassistbillycox.com and scroll down to view the two YouTube videos of Starman Productions. They are great. They, Billy, they are terrific. Especially the one that I liked so much dealt with Jimi Hendrix in a certain sense saving a person's life just because of his music and how those in Vietnam responded to Hendrix music, et cetera, et cetera. And, of course, how the Band of Gypsies got together. As a matter of fact, when we come back, let's touch on that and start playing some of your other music, okay?
All right, Dr. Bob.
All right. We'll be right back with Billy Cox, Old School Blue Blues, and The Last Gypsy Standing, and more about Billy Cox and his music and Starman videos, bassistbillycox.com.
Hi, this is Janie Hendrix, sister of Jimi Hendrix, and you're listening to 21st Century Radio with Dr. Bob Hieronymus.
And more about Billy Cox and his music, go to Starman videos, and that is bassistbillycox.com. Billy, I for the first time, I went up there last night, and I was just astounded by the Starman. You going to do any more of those Starman things?
Yes, we've got one we're going to post probably later on tonight about maybe 10 or 11 o'clock.
Well, could you give us a little insight on one of them? I don't want to tell the whole story, of course, but how and why were the Band of Gypsies formed?
Well, everyone knows the story. That is a Jimi Hendrix aficionado. He had signed a previous contract, and these people found out that he was famous, and they were suing for millions of dollars. So, didn't have any other way to turn. That's what that song, "Last Gypsy Standing," is all about. It's autobiographical about us joining forces, myself and Buddy Miles, to help our friend who was in need. Yeah. And so, they decided just give him an album, and that Band of Gypsies happened to be it. So we went, we rehearsed a couple weeks. I'm telling the story about on BillyCox.com, the webpage there. But we rehearsed and did those four shows and got him out of his problems and the debt that he was in.
Yeah, what a hell of a good friend you are. I mean, you know, because he was really worried. And
yeah, but that's what friendship's all about. I think a lot of us have associates. We don't have friends, but true friends are there for you in the time of need, and that's what friendship's all about.
Well, Old School Blues, Blues is your latest album. Why'd you feel like you had to return to your roots, Billy?
Why had to what?
Why did you have to return to your roots?
Why? Because it was necessary to go there. But I never left, really. I've always been in that particular area.
Yeah. Well, what's your message here in Old School Blues? You say, today there is not enough light of the old school blues feel. They are just glimpses behind those words.
They're just glimpses, because I think a lot of the, we're hearing watered down, I think in a lot of instances, a lot of watered down blues. But I think a lot of the guys who, and I'm not by myself, there's a lot of great blues guys who have never even, you don't even know their name, but they're keeping the legacy alive, doing what they do. And so I have to, my hat's off to those fellows who do that. And I decided just to do this particular album to exemplify my soul and how I feel about the blues.
Well, let's talk about the group that you put together for the CD. Could you tell us a little bit about, say, Byron Showman Bordeaux, the guitar player?
Byron, I met him when he was about 16 years old, and he was, in fact, he's been living in Las Vegas and been doing quite a bit of stuff around out in Vegas. He played with Bobby Womack for about 6 years. He played with Buddy Miles for about 3.5 years, so he's well experienced. Knows what he's doing, and if you get on there and you see there's a song we did, the Voodoo Child, you see this guy is incredible. I've only been on the internet with that for about maybe a month, and we've got over 1,000-some hits for that particular song because of the showmanship that he does that particular one. And then we have Vincent Faulks. He's out of Indianapolis, Indiana. He's played with the Blue Skeletons up there for years, and he teaches guitar, an incredible guitar player. Also got Gary Skipper. He's from here in Nashville, Tennessee, and he's played with, I first saw him on a television show, and I wondered, where did this guy come from? So we've got great, you know, this group has got a bunch of great musicians in it that really are really professional people. And the sound that we generate, I'm very proud of what we've been able to do as a group. We all get along. And I tell some groups, if drummer doesn't like the guitar player, try and patch it up. If the bass player doesn't like the drummer, patch it up. Because if there's any ill will in the group, it will show up in the music that you're playing. And music is basically for healing purposes, but it's a spiritual form of expression. Music is a spiritual form of expression, and a lot of guys don't realize that, and a lot of times the music doesn't sound as good as it could because they have problems and in the group that they haven't patched up, and it shows in the music.
Well, you do some wonderful gospel music as well. I mean, it's obvious that your life about music is, you're not just a musician. Music is, as you said, it's a healing experience. And you're one of those individuals that you've said that for decades. You know, I mean, this is a major part of your life. And frankly, that was one of the major reasons why I always was also interested in the work of Jimi Hendrix, because I felt he was the same way. He wasn't just a musician. He was a healer. He helped heal this planet just like you have.
Yeah, and see, Jimmy, on top of that, Jimmy was a true genius. Now, there's a difference. True geniuses, musical geniuses now, they create in the now, which makes their art transcend time.
Yeah.
See? Mm-hmm. And like, you know, Van Gogh, Picasso, Mozart, Beethoven, Brahms, Hendrix. But in Hendrix's case, he took the guitar and rock music to another level.
Yep, he sure did. Well, with your help too, brother. Well, we're out of time right now, Billy, and I look forward to seeing you. And that's the end of the hour. 21st Century Radio is produced by Hieronymus & Company. Our executive producer and research assistant is Laura Kortner. I'm Dr. Bob Hieronymus, and remember, shine your shoes and get a haircut.